This is Rewind with Jimmy Himes and our special guest today, former Commissioner of the SEC, Roy Kramer. This interview brought to you by A.G. Hines Company, selling building materials since anyone can remember. We talked about earlier expansion in the SEC and with other conferences. Now we're seeing the Big Ten from coast to coast, from Los Angeles to New Jersey. What do you think of the current state of expansion in college football?
Well, you know, it's tough for me to talk because we were sort of the originator in some sense of that. The purpose you had in a conference was to bring sort of a regional group of schools together for competition. We've lost that to a degree now, as you said, with the Big Ten and other conferences, the ACC going across the country. That I don't feel is healthy for the overall scene of competition. You know, the great part of the Southeastern Conference, it always has been, is the great rivalries through the years, the Georgia-Auburn game, the Florida-Georgia game, the Tennessee-Alabama game, the Alabama-Auburn game. Those games had a ring to it that was college football. That was the tradition of the game. When we start losing that, when you start seeing, you know, UCLA and Rutgers or whatever that is, I think you lose that traditional feel of college athletics. And I don't think that's healthy for those schools nor for the long run. Unfortunately, many of those, as you know well, were made primarily because of the distribution of television money and the ability to produce enough to raise their revenue, stream of revenue. Somehow, I think those schools have lost something. I think in long term, the schools on the West Coast have lost considerably because no longer are those great games. Some of them will still be played. I'm not saying they won't be, but they won't have the same meaning because they're fighting with Ohio State or Michigan for the conference championship as opposed to fighting Washington and Washington State or Southern Cal and Washington or whatever the case might be. And I think you lose that. That's the strength of college football has always been its regional strength of competition. The people are in the next border state, so forth, is a rival. Texas and Oklahoma are regional schools with the schools of our conference, and therefore it's not going all the way. It sounds different because they've never been in this conference, but there's still a regional tie to it that I think will make the Southeastern Conference continue to succeed and continue to be very strong. But on the long term, when you start adding schools halfway across or all the way across the country, I think you lose that, and to a degree, I think you will hurt college football.
Do you think in a few years we will have conferences break away from the NCAA, form their own organization, and govern themselves?
That question has been on the docket forever, almost. We have seen a move in that direction, as we have seen the NCAA move toward more legislation based on division. But as long as we compete, particularly in the sport of basketball or other sports, there needs to be some kind of a national body to set the standards and set the rules and so forth. I think you will always have some kind of an organization that covers that. It may now become more sport-specific, where you have significantly different group determining the rules and regulations for the so-called large schools, the so-called five colors. Now it's going to be four, really. I think you'll see that. And that's going to be necessary because of all of the things that have come into that division with regard to the portal and with regard to the NIL and all of those things. I think you'll see a lot more divisional legislation, but you're still going to have some kind of a body that sets standards nationally for particularly those sports that cross divisions.
Right.
One of the great attractions, as you know, in the basketball tournament has always been that first weekend where Oakland plays Kentucky or somebody like that. And in order to govern those kinds of situations, I think you're always going to have some kind of a national governing body. You know, the NCAA takes a lot of hits, and sometimes it's rightful, so I'm not saying that. Well, on the other hand, all of us should sit down and realize the NCAA is not some Wizard of Oz behind a curtain somewhere. It's us. It's all our members. The members decide those rules. Those rules weren't decided by somebody oversighting somewhere else. And so it was decided by the members themselves. And if you want to change those rules, change those rules. If you want to do, you know, everybody talked about all the regulations of recruiting. They got there because we wanted them.
What do you see as the pros and cons of the transfer portal?
You know, you got 100, you got 85 college in Division I football scholarships. Not all 85 of those are going to be happy. I never had a second string right guard that was happy. He wanted to be the first string right guard. So he'd like to go someplace where he can be the first string. That's been there in the mind of the young man ever since we started the game. So there's always going to be that desire. The thing that has complicated it, that makes it difficult to maneuver and to regulate to a degree, is the entrance of the NIL and the potential of the earnings on the side. Mm-hmm. And that has changed it to the point where we now have a first-string player, sometimes a very good first-string player, looking around to see where he might go. Or he's in a program that has lost games. He's had a losing season for 2 years now. I personally would like there to be some type of restriction in that area whereby there's a limitation on the number of times you can exercise that ability during your career, so that you're not just a nomad traveling around the country for 4 years. Whether that can be done legally under the current laws, I'm not sure it can be. Many of these issues that we're talking about, at some time, I believe, have to have some kind of exemption. All of these cases come up because the antitrust, this is antitrust, you're restricting this individual's right to gain this money, the NIL money, you're restricting this person's right to freedom to play wherever he can. At some point, you have to have some way to have some kind of an exemption, to have some kind of sanity in this process, which we don't have today at all. And the difficulty, you can't do it by states because, everybody's in a different state.
Right.
And you can't have a conference, Florida has different state laws than Kentucky has and so forth all across the country. And so you have no way to set any kind of competitive standards. And in order to do that, you have to have some kind of an exemption in some areas. I'm not saying across the board, but some areas in order to make that work. Now, the NFL has found a way to get that exemption to a degree by their salary caps for their team. And Major League Baseball has that exemption and so forth. And at some point, you're going to have that at the NCAA level. So at some point, somebody's going to have to step in and help determine that. Now, whether that'll ever occur, I don't know.
I want to jump into your career. I think at one point you said, I didn't set out to be a high school coach. I didn't set out to be an athletic director. I didn't set out to be a commissioner. What did you set out to be?
Set out to be a high school football coach. Teach American history. That's what I started out doing.
And you went to Michigan in 1955 as a high school assistant. How did that happen?
Well, I got out of the Army and I had the GI Bill that paid you. At that time, you could pay your way to college. And so you could go anywhere you want to. And all but two of my brothers and my dad had gone to the University of Michigan to law school. My other brother had gone to the University of Pennsylvania business school, and I'd been up to Michigan several times. I decided to go up there and get a master's degree. I had the GI Bill and so forth, and so we went to Ann Arbor, and As it turned out, I ended up getting offered a job in Battle Creek, Michigan as a freshman or JV football coach and a history teacher. And at that time, those schools up there were paying a lot more than they were down here, so I decided that we'd see what we could find. I found a job in Battle Creek, Michigan. Very fortunate, because the head coach at Battle Creek later became the athletic director at Central Michigan. And he was just a basketball coach and a football coach. He was both at Battle Creek. And Bert Gustafson was on that staff. He later became a personnel director for the Green Bay Packers. And Vince Carrillot later became one of Duffy's number one assistants. It was a great group of men. Mm-hmm. And I ended up there for a couple of years in Battle Creek, and I got a job in a little town called Hudson, Michigan. And it went undefeated the first year. I was lucky. Went undefeated the first year. Everybody was a senior, so I figured I better get out of town. We didn't have anything. You know, in high school, you don't recruit. So you're kind of a victim of how the jeans were running 16 or 17 years ago. And if the jeans aren't running very good, you're hurt. So then I went to another school, to Wajak. We had success there. They were all seniors. And that was probably the biggest break I ever had, because they had a 0-10 record, 0-9. We played the 9 games the previous year, hadn't won a game. I don't know why I took that job. I took it primarily because I got offered two high school jobs in the same day. Sturgis, Michigan, was a nice town. And Sarah Jo just said, well, how are you going to decide? And I said, well, we're going to drive over and look at both towns. So we did. Went over to Sturgis, nice town. So, and went in a gas station. The football stadium went up to high school, and I asked him where the football stadium was. He didn't know. And I finally found out. We had a nice little high school stadium. And I went over to Wajak, which was more of a blue-collar town. Once again, the stadium went up to high school. And so I went in the drugstore. And the pharmacist was in there, and I asked him, oh, he says, we got a great little city. We got a terrible team, but we got a really nice stadium. It's right down the street, turn right. It's got a brick wall around it, got a nice little press box. And so I came out, and I said, Sergeant, I think we're going to the Wajak. She said, why? Because the pharmacist knew where the football stadium was. And as it turned out, it was unbelievable. We had two guys at the two Bierman brothers. One started for Iowa, one started for Michigan State, and played a long time in the pros. And Danny Underwood was one of the linemen, ended up being captain at Michigan State. Tailback in the OI formation, won the state high school 100-yard dash championship. And the quarterback was in the first graduating class of the Air Force Academy. An unbelievable group. Hmm. And I came back out and I came and said, Sergio, what do you think when you met the team? I said, Sergio, if you don't win here, we're going back to Tennessee, and I'll be the head coach at Barnard High School.
You took Central Michigan job. You were there 11 years. You won a national championship in 1974, which I know had to be a thrill. But I also want to ask you about this, because I know you developed a very close relationship with a lot of your players. Tell me about Roy's Boys.
Roy's Boys is just a group of good old guys that played for me. Probably didn't like playing for me at all, but that brought them together, I think, because maybe they hated me. But I don't know. But they got together. They still get together. They go up north fishing and hunting and have a get outing and so forth. And that still gets together. But there was a one of the great things about coaching, you can't take that away. It's not the... You certainly want to win, certainly you want all of that. But the great part about it is they become your family. Mm-hmm. And I think any coach that's been in it very long has that feeling. They never leave you. You know, I hear from them, they come by and see me. And to me, they're still about 19 or 20 years old. They're all the same. And they all fit together in that kind of a relationship that's, you can't find in any other way, I don't think. It's a great feeling that's there. And that's one of the greatest rewards of coaching is that part of the game.
I think you got out of it in 1979. Did you regret that?
At times, yes, because, you know, you miss that part of it. The day-to-day contact, you know, they come to you with every kind of problem that exists. you develop a relationship, and you miss that once you get out of coaching. You try to keep it up, but you can't. You're not at that same level, and you miss that. But in the long run, no, I don't think I. I had no idea I was ever going to be an athletic director. I ended up at Vanderbilt, and I enjoyed being an athletic director in time. It was a developmental period for this conference, as you know, and we were doing a lot of different things. Boyd McWhorter was the commissioner and became a very close friend of mine. And it's a tough job, I'll tell you that. It's a very tough job because indirectly, if the football program's not winning, it's the athletic director's fault. Certainly it's the coach's fault. You got to fire him. And today, particularly with all of the pressures of raising money and building facilities and all of the rules you work with, it's probably as difficult a job as you can have anywhere, anytime.
What did you consider to be your greatest achievement? Was it expansion? Was it an SEC football conference championship game? Was it winning the most national championships in all sports over a decade period? Was it the $95 million TV distribution to the teams? What did you feel like was your greatest accomplishment?
I don't know that I ever sat down and looked at it, and I'm not sure I could say today. I don't know what. It all depends on who you're looking at and what's happening. Personally, I think the thing that I felt over the course of time was that we were able to develop a camaraderie, a loyalty, a pride in being a part of the conference, that it was significant to be a part of the Southeastern Conference. When they first started the chant SEC, SEC, it didn't matter whether it was Mississippi State or Georgia or Alabama or Kentucky or whoever it might be, there was a feeling that we were special because we were a part of this conference. And the ability to bring people together in a way where they felt that, I think, is a source of some pride.
Commissioner, I appreciate it. Great to catch up with you. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Enjoyed the visit.
Okay.